The Florida community of mindfulness is happy to make these talks available to you. If you find this talk to be a benefit, please consider making a donation to support us. You'll find a donation button on the talks section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. Thank you, and may you be happy and free of suffering.
So this is the first day of this four-day retreat here in Tampa, entitled Mind Training, How to Use the Thinking Mind to Support Your Transformation, and then parentheses, rather than sabotaging it, exclamation point. I think Fred was being a little clever when he, when he made up this title. So before we get into the matter at hand, are there any questions that anybody has so far about what's gone on in the retreat, how you're doing in the retreat, the meditation that has been shared so far? Is everything sort of clear? Or even if it's murky, you're clear that it's murky. See, that's a clarity too. Just a thread of Brian coming up here. Terrorizes me. So again, people often say, I'm really confused. And I said, are you sure you're confused? And they say, yeah, I'm really confused. And I say, well, you seem to be very clear that you're confused. That's clarity. That's so again, don't be confused by what words mean. And we'll be spending a lot of time talking about that during this retreat. So good. So everything is sort of, everybody's kind of settling in and... had a good night's sleep, had a terrible night's sleep, is enjoying the food, is hating the food. Right? We're kind of neutral about everything, That's all because of your conditioning, but we'll talk about that. So this retreat again is entitled Mind Training, How to Use the Thinking Mind to Support Your Transformation Rather Than Sabotaging It. And then the description, the paragraph said, for many meditators and followers of a spiritual path, the thinking mind is often perceived as the enemy. Our thoughts, we think, are the obstacles to our having a peaceful mind. So like an enemy, we need to get rid of them, overcome them, subjugate them. Thus we enter an endless struggle of control domination with our very own thinking mind. Yet there is another way. The Buddhist tradition of mind training offers us a clear methodology for simply changing the way we think rather than calling us to do battle with our own natural thinking mind. We learn to think and perceive life in an enlightened way rather than the opposite. Right thinking is one of the eight pillars of the Buddhist path of healing and transformation. Clear. Yeah. Now again, in this room, with the 44, 45 people here, there are some people who are fairly new to the practice, and some people who've been at it, for many years, if not decades. So that's a time span. At the same time, there are people here, irrespective of the time span of their practice, on sort of the developmental path of the Dharma. There are some people who are at sort of still at the beginning stages of the path, some at the middle stages, and some that are fairly advanced. I leave that up to you to decide. But I only say that because many people here, over the course of time, especially if you've been around a while, have been exposed to many different teachings and have and have practiced many different teachings. And so their understanding of mind and thought in terms of the people here may be different. Okay. And that's fine. These teachings will still be relevant because everybody here has a thinking mind. And unless you're in a fully enlightened Buddha, everybody's mind is distorting reality. Right? And depending on, again, the degree of distortion, that is the only difference. So we can all benefit from these teachings. So again, there may be some of you here who have heard these teachings and practiced these teachings for many years. So this retreat is a good time to kind of check in. And with a very objective way of looking at your mind. So is that clear? So, I mean, I sit up here with a diversity in the audience, and I want to be of benefit to everyone. So it's up to you to take it in the way that's most meaningful and helpful to you. Now, again, I like interaction. So, you know, one of the ways that we can personalize things over the course of these next 3 days is if you ask me questions. Because when you ask me questions, I can answer them specifically to you. Is that clear? Otherwise, I will be teaching fairly generically. One of the things you may have noticed, people have come to retreat before, I've kind of done away with private interviews. I've even done away with small group interviews, you know, but I'm still doing large interviews, like with a third of the people every day. One day we may do away with that. Now, why did I do that? Well, one of the reasons was as it was taking more time. I mean, basically, I was finding myself 3-4 years ago spending most of the retreat doing interviews in the morning, morning meditation, in the afternoon, in the evening, and I was spending less and less time in the meditation hall. And that kind of, it didn't feel right to me. I'm like, this is the heart of things. This is where things are happening. So again, I felt I was kind of, I was working with people, but I was kind of missing the bigger picture of what was going on. The other thing that I've come to learn over the years, and I am somebody who began a tradition where all discussion of your practice went on with your teacher alone in a private room. It's called Doksan in the Zen tradition. So, you know, it was very personal, it was very intimate, and totally private, right? And even in the community, you know, many people didn't even talk about their practice. You know, that was like just between them and their teacher. And so that's where I come from. But over the years of teaching within our community, I've kind of loosened up. And I haven't just loosened up only because of the numbers and the things I was talking earlier, is that I realized that many of the people who come to private interviews, the issues they bring, while they seem very personal to themselves, are issues that everybody has, right? They're common issues. And so there was a lot of kind of repetition in that. But also, what I also learned as I began to do in the intensives and other things, more group calls, and again, in the beginning, I talked to everybody individually on the phone when the numbers were smaller in the intensives. What I realized over time in getting feedback is that people like the group calls, you know, because people identified with what other people were asking. And they learned a lot from my response to that other person. So it almost like was magnifying the learning process. Because if it's one-on-one, only one person learns. If there's six people have the advantage of learning from five other people. So all of a sudden, it became a much greater learning, and we've just kind of expanded that. I don't know how. So in this, I think there are 14 in each group, which seems manageable. Now, what that takes, of course, from your side, is a willingness to let go of your privacy, you see. And for many of us, our neuroses, our problems, our issues, you know, that which causes us affliction, we are very private about, right? We hold it close to us, don't we? Right? We don't want to. It's kind of bizarre because it's the afflictive, it's the neurotic, that's what we want to get rid of, you see? That's what we should be publicly exposing, right? So everybody knows what's going on with me and they can help me. But instead, we hide it behind a public face. So, and again, that's just the world of self. You know, the self wants to what? What is self concerned about? Itself. How other people see it, how it sees itself, you know, and it's always kind of managing its image. Everybody know what I'm talking about? And that's the problem. You know, this retreat is not about the tyranny of self. That's another retreat, but I think you're all familiar with that. And so I've also found that doing it in a group process helps with the process of non-self. And enables us to see that we're a community. Now, again, I'm not, you know, we're not just going down to, you know, to the mall and holding these things. You know, anybody can come listen. You know, so you know, we have maybe one day we will, but you know, at this point we, you know, so again, there is a container. The container is our community. Only people here are people who are members. We don't have non-members here. For lots of reasons, but one of the reasons is, you know, we're all part of the same Dharma family. We're all practicing together, right? And so to be open with each other, I think, builds trust with each other. So so that's good. I can't remember why I just got into that. Something about maybe later this day, or yeah. The Buddha said, "All we are is the result of what we have thought. It is founded on our thoughts. It is made up of our thoughts. If a person speaks or acts with a pure thought, happiness follows them like a shadow that never leaves." So, Dhammapada, one of the earliest texts of Buddhism. And another one, "Your worst enemy cannot harm you as much as your own thoughts, unguarded. But once mastered, no one can help you as much, not even your father or mother." So in a certain sense, as opposed to other kinds of Dharma teachings and practices, this retreat is easy because we are going to deal with thoughts. And if there's one thing that we are incredibly familiar with is our thoughts. Everybody has them, morning, noon, and night. And everybody has had them, you know, well, at least, you know, from the earliest days of language development. So we are, please understand, I am, even though I'll be giving teachings, these teachings should be very relevant. If you don't get it, ask me a question, because I am talking simply about the human experience. And the human experience very much involves thinking about. Is that clear? We all have a thinking mind. Now, the content of that mind or the way that mind operates is what we're going to get into. But we all have the thinking mind. We all are run around by our thoughts. And as the Buddha said, in Buddhism, the mind and thoughts precede everything. From thoughts come feelings. From thoughts and feelings come actions. Actions of what? Speech and body. Actions or deeds. So we can always be working from the outside in, getting control of our body and its actions, getting control of our speech and its actions, which is good. But we're not getting at the source of what's driving us. What's driving us is our mind, and in this case, primarily, it's our thoughts. Is that clear? So I want to spend a little time in the beginning kind of doing big picture. For some of this, it'll be a review. So we get big picture of what's going on here. And again, this is just about our own human, it's just about our human experience. Okay, so everybody just close your eyes. And even though this may be hard since I'm talking, everybody pretend that your ears are closed, your nose is closed, your mouth is closed, tongue is closed, and sensations in your body are closed. Like, it's almost like you were in one of those deprivation chambers or something, you know, this pitch black, nothing going on. No sight, no sound, no sensation. You're in darkness, and there's no sensory experience. Primal void. And just kind of feel what that's like. Again, I'm talking, forgive me, but just imagining no sensory experience at all. You're in a sensory deprivation chamber. That's your home. Now imagine in that sensory deprivation blackness, you open your eyes, but all you see is black. Now you open your ears, but you don't hear anything. You open your nose, you don't smell anything. You open your taste buds, but there's nothing to taste. You open the sensory sensations of your body, but there's nothing to feel. Totally neutral. So now your senses are opening, but there's just nothing. And now all of a sudden imagine that a door opens in front of you. And you walk out into the world. This was a kind of science fiction movie. You could have walked out and been here at this retreat. So please open your eyes. And just look forward. Don't think anything. Just look. All of a sudden, they're seeing. Wow. Before there was just blackness. Now they're seeing. Just see. Don't think. Sound. Of course, you hear my voice, but there may be other sounds you hear. Sound of the wind, sound of trees, sound of birds, sound of animals, sounds of people, all kinds of sounds. Just sounds. Don't think. All of a sudden, you smell. Smell of the earth, smell of trees, smell of cooking. I don't know what you're smelling. All of a sudden on your skin, you feel cool. It's cool. cool day. You feel the sun on you. You feel your clothes on your body. You feel sensations in your body. You're just feeling. You're just sensing. And in your mouth, you're tasting. You might even pick something up and taste. Simple. Don't think. You don't even know what it is. You just taste. You don't know anything. You're just pure sensory experience. Five senses. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and sensing in the body. And that's all you are. Just, it's like you've been in a dark house and you've just opened the windows and you can see out. And you can hear. Your ears are another kind of window that have now opened. You can hear sound. You can smell odors. You can taste, whatever you call them. You can feel things in your body. Okay. You're just sensory experience. Totally alive to whatever you see and hear and smell and taste and feel. Okay? How's everything? How's it going? What? Wonderful, yeah. Any problems? Any issues? Anything not right? Anything that should be different? No. There you are. How is it? Wonderful. Okay. Five senses. But the human mind has more than just five senses. In Buddhism, the sixth sense is what might be called our cognating mind, our thinking mind, kind of our everyday mind. You know that mind? All right. Now, see? So that's the mind that cognates, that see, in other words, when your eyes see an object, like I see a tree, the eye is making contact with its object. When I hear a sound, the ear, the hearing faculty is making contact with the sound. Is that clear? So all our five senses are just making contact. That's our sensory experience, right? The sense organs making contact with a sense object, right? That's the way Buddhism looks at things. Now then, you see, we have this cognating mind. In a child, very simple. In an animal, very simple, very primitive. But human beings, depending on who they are, have this capacity to think about what they're perceiving. Right? So, when the thinking mind, and the thinking mind is very interesting because it functions through the five senses. The other five senses cannot function with the other ones. The eyes only see, the ears only hear, right? The nose only smells. They're kind of unitary in their function, okay? But the thinking mind, the cognating mind, functions through itself, right? But also, it gathers all the information. How does the thinking mind gather information? Through the other five. Those are its windows. So the thinking mind by itself, I mean, what would the thinking mind, if it never had left the deprivation chamber, it wouldn't do anything, right? It would just be kind of aware, it'd be there. But as soon as the senses start having objects, right? The thinking mind can be part of that experience as it perceives that, and it can go tree, leaves, branches, trunk, sky. You see, it can begin to go beyond just pure perception and begin to label things. Is that clear? See, can you feel it? Can you feel yourself coming into the world? See, now you're labeling things. And then over time, you begin to have experience. See, I mean, if that was my only tree, that's all I would know. Another tree. I think that one's prettier than that one. See, discrimination. The mind can begin to discriminate. Right? It can begin to elaborate. Colors, you know, it can, you know, can you see, it begins to elaborate. Trees, forests, types of trees, types of plants, types of this, type, you know, and it then, but it could also over time gather experience. Like, dislike, beautiful, ugly. That's called in Buddhism proliferation. The thinking mind just proliferates its thoughts, its perceptions. Right? But you see, not only does it have thoughts about the five senses, right? It also has other capacities, doesn't it? It can what? It can reason. It can be logical. It can analyze. It can assess. It can reflect. It can remember. It can dream. You know what I mean? Can you see what's going on here? Amazing proliferation. Some of it is developed through contact with the five senses, right? The real objects of the world. But over time, mind can develop its own world. Right? It's forgotten that all the information it's gotten, it could have only gotten through the five senses. Right? I mean, if you're reading something, you need eyes. If you're hearing somebody talk, you need ears. Right? It forgets all that. And now it's processing, thinking about, analyzing, assessing, judging, evaluating. Is that clear? Now, I mean, if that was not problematic enough, I'm just trying to give you a big picture of what's going on here. Don't run out of the room. There is hope. There is a sixth consciousness. The sixth consciousness is the seat of this sense of self. Okay? In a very generic way, it means we have a sense that all of this, right? All of this experience of the five senses and the thinking mind and thoughts are all related to who? To me. See, where'd that come from? It comes from our seventh level of consciousness. So not only is this whole process that we describe going on, it's going on to who? To me. These are my thoughts, my eyes, my this, my body, my seeing, my hearing, my this, my past, my future, my... So all of a sudden, all of the that's going on in the upper six is now tinged by, dyed by, D-Y-E-D, the sense of self. Things getting a little complicated? Right, but you can see it clearly. I mean, this is profound. But it explains what's going on here. And it's happening to everybody here. Now, but somebody might say, but, you know, my experience of it is very different than her experience, is very different than his experience, right? Now, why is that? Because there's something else. There's the seventh level. No, the eighth level. The eighth level. This is the storehouse consciousness. This is big. We don't see it. The other ones we can kind of see. This is big. The storehouse consciousness is the repository, the storehouse of everything we've ever thought, felt. So all your experiences, right? Your childhood experiences, your adolescent experiences, your young adult experience, you know, all the things you've ever done and thought and felt, right? That's all stored. And that is also coming into the conditioning of your experience. Is that kind of clear? So it's not as if we're just operating like in the present with all this stuff, right? I got the six senses, I got the thinking, and I got the self. You know, I can deal with that. You see? But even how I'm dealing with that is being conditioned by how I've always been dealing with stuff. That's been conditioned by family of origin, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, societal, you know, experience, good things, bad things, thoughts, all the thoughts I've had, happy thoughts, angry thoughts, all my self-concepts and all my core beliefs. You know what I mean? Where's that? That's all stored. And that's conditioning us. That's the end of the talk. I leave you to it. You know, I'll be back on Monday. See how you've straightened this mess out. So, we've all had the same experience. We drove to retreat. Right? We parked. Right? We walked in with our bags. We were told to go to a room, right? We walked up the stairs or down the hall. We found the number. We went into the room. A bed. A bathroom. Right? I mean, that's all, right? Came down here. Put down the cushion. Eat food, talk to people, sit, walk, go to sleep, get up. That's in reality all that's happened. And yet, that's not all that's happened, is it? Actually, for many people, they might not have even noticed it. Or if they noticed it, it was noticing it in terms of what? What? Self, or, but the self manifests as what? Opinions, thoughts about this, thoughts about that, thoughts about this one, thoughts about that one, thoughts about the food, thoughts about the weather, thoughts about the trees, thoughts about everything, good ones, bad ones. Right? Isn't that true? Non-stop. And we think we live in reality. And we think we live in reality. Because every one of your thoughts, every one of your judgments, every one of your evaluations, good ones, bad ones, is all conditioned by your past. And by self. and you don't even know it. You think you're actually a free human being, having your own thoughts, having your own values, having your own opinions. Isn't that not true? And yet, according to Buddhist psychology, that is not true. That is true, but we are not who we think we are. And who we think we are is something that has been created. Because even your storehouse consciousness, you know, I mean, you spent your first many, many years of your life absorbing. Right? You didn't have great intelligence, great perception, great discernment, right? You just took it all in. Positive, negative, healthy, unhealthy. You just took it all in, right? Where did it all go? Storehouse consciousness. And that's conditioning us right now in the way we see the world and think about the world and people and ourselves, and we think we're free people. These are my thoughts. These are my opinions. These are my likes and dislikes. I like this. I don't like that. I want this. I don't want that. This is who I am. This is who I'm not. These are my values. These are my ideals. These are, right? Isn't that the way human beings talk to each other? Yet, we never stop to say, where did these come from? Right? What happened between just opening the eyes and seeing, opening the ears and hearing, opening the nose and smelling, opening the mouth and tasting, opening the body and sensing, and just being aware? How did this whole, I was going to call it a morass, this whole, you know, people talk about filters, endless filters that people have. A filter does what? What does a filter do? What? Yeah, it keeps, yeah, and but it lets some stuff in, you see. Now, if you didn't know there was a filter, right? Like, see what I'm saying? Like, let's say you're down the line, right? And the filter is here. So all the stuff's coming in, and way out of your conscious awareness, lots of stuff is being filtered out. Right? So all you know is what? Right? Yeah, what comes through to you. And then you make your decisions and judgments about life and yourself based on this. You think this is reality. And we're not even aware, you know, maybe 98% has been filtered out. Because I have very narrow filters that are conditioned. And I don't even know that. See? No one told me. It's like a science fiction movie, right? I mean, no one told me, right? There's this incredible filter. It's like living in a totalitarian society, you know, where all the means of communication are controlled. You know, like 1984. You know those kinds of things. And if you didn't know that, you would think what? This is what's going on. This is life. Yeah. No, that never happened. I mean, I didn't read about it. You see what I'm saying? You know? So it's like living in a totalitarian society, except, you know, the minister of information is our own mind. And we don't even know it. Now, let me just say, in Buddhist psychology, Yogacara, there is a ninth level. This is the level of pure awareness. This is the ground from which all this arises. It's like they call it the ground. You see, if we think about it, we're on the ground here, aren't we? And yet, out of the ground, buildings, trees, flowers, every plant, everything comes out of the ground. But it's the same ground. The ground gives life to it all, supports it all. So in our mind, in its most fundamental aspect, there is this ground, pure, undefiled, and not it's not that it's in a certain sense of the same essence, but it's like totally different. We can distinguish between the ground and the things that are growing in the ground, right? And if you're confused, you could always do it by, you could dig it up. You could dig up the tree, you could dig up the plant, you could dig up the flower, you could knock down the building, right? And you'd see, oh, the ground is still there. Now, the trees and all the life, in a certain sense, had no life without the ground, right? And yet, they were different than the ground. Because when you pull them up, they have no life in it. The ground is always here. So in the same way, with all this proliferation, all this stuff that's happened, all this conditioning, the ground of mind, the fundamental whole awareness of mind, that's another retreat, is still the ground. And that is always available to nourish us. Support us. It is our true home. It is the ground. Right? We could chop down every tree, pull them all up by the roots. We what do they call it? Clear cutting or whatever it's, scraping. I was out in Denver recently where they call it scraping. It's like one day there's a house there and you walk by there 2 days later, nothing. Right? The bulldozer. They call it scraping. And all of a sudden what? Later, new house. Okay? So we could scrape this earth here, right? And the ground would still remain. Right? And then if we wanted, we could create something that we want. The ground, because the ground still is nurturing life. Right? So our mind is the same. So mind training is about, we begin with what? Where we're at. We just bought the place. These are the trees, these are the flowers, these are the plants, these are the weeds. And now we want to what? What? Redo it. We may keep some. It's not all bad. But there's some that are really noxious. We may want to get rid of those. So this is mind training. And in the Buddhist teachings on mind training and practices, we are dealing with thoughts. We need to retrain our thinking mind. Because by not training it all these years, all these decades, it has just proliferated. Right? It's out of control. And it is distorting reality. I mean, this is kind of big picture, but there has to be an understanding. I mean, there doesn't have to be, but it certainly helps to have an understanding of what's going on here. So you see how we got to where we are, the bigger picture of why it came about, but also see the inherent openness and possibilities to retrain. Because everything in our mind is just conditioning. By the way, this may be strange to people, how many people think in English? How many people think in another language? Anybody? No? What? You think in Swedish. Yeah. Yeah. And I would imagine if you went to Sweden, everybody would say, how many people think in English? People, right? So, I mean, even our thoughts are in a foreign language. That makes total sense to us. But to somebody else makes no sense. How can that be? I mean, what if we'd grown up in a different language that had like a very different syntax? Right? I mean, maybe some of you who grew up speaking German or Swedish realize, and I've heard this many people, there are ideas and concepts in your language that you search to find some comparable in English, right? And it's hard for us to think of in that way, right? But it's true. So even our language is distorting because we're having to have an experience that we then turn into language, right? And some of us have very limited vocabularies. Don't take it personally. Some of us have very limited vocabularies. I mean, we just have a few words for human experience or people. And there, you know, and then so when we're in an experience, it's just like a few words, good, bad, like, dislike, right? Agree, disagree. I mean, that's our language. But that has nothing to do with what's happening in reality. Reality is this total open unfolding of experience. And yet our concepts, our ideas, our language, our linguistics are taking this vast, complex thing and reducing it to something what? That we can understand. Right? Right? And if you wonder, as you look to the national dialect, why is it that some people seem to be so simplistic in their ideologies and their ideas and religions, you know, on all sides? It's because of that. Very limited vocabulary. Right? And have very limited means of interpreting worlds other than what? Either on our side or you're not. Right? Either see it my way or you don't. I mean, that's a thinking style. We think it's like political. No, it's thinking. It's the way people think. They have very limited ability to think with any complexity. And it seems like it's what? Only getting worse. So that's why in Buddhism, going back to the Buddha, the fundamental stress has always been on the mind. Understanding the mind. Training the mind. Can you see how important this is? Because if it's not trained in this way and things aren't understood in this way, then, you know, anything and everything can happen. So let me just stop for a few moments and take questions. Any questions about anything that's been said? Clearly understood, doesn't make sense. Yes. Yes, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
So, how do we feel like we're just walking around and affecting each other? Mm-hmm. With our thoughts? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Churches,
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just
Yeah, so the question is, yeah, so everybody's walking around with their delusions infecting each other.
Yeah,
okay. In Buddhism, that's called delusion.
So here, okay, so here, you know, obviously I like you.
Yeah. What is your point, Raven? Stop. That's a thought.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just another thought.
Yeah.
Raven, that's just a thought.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, isn't it interesting? You just went on about the proliferation of the infected mind, and then you generate another infected thought.
Yeah.
It's got to stop somewhere. And that's what we do. At some point you realize that's why one finds a spiritual path. That's why one finds a guide or a teacher. Because one realizes, yeah, all my life I've been thinking I'm making my own choices, and I've been wondering why it hasn't worked, or even worse, it's been painful at times, right? You see? Because I didn't know that, like you say, I was infected. Infected with what? Delusion. I'm just talking generally, okay?
Yeah.
Don't take it personally.
Yeah, no,
which is another thought.
Realistic.
You see, another thought.
Yeah.
Another thought. Why can't you just listen? You see how we are? You see how we are? We don't stop, do we? Explain this to me. Explain that. Well, that doesn't mean I wanted an answer. Right? You know, the fish doesn't have to take the bait. Yeah, so again, I mean, they're a good question. But did you notice how you kind of went down a road of a little bit of despair, or how we, you see, and that's our conditioning.
I feel a bit overwhelmed.
Yeah, well, don't. Yeah, well, don't. Look, hold on. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop. Okay. This is. This is wonderful. You're actually right. See, I was just about to thank you. Yeah. So this is wonderful, because everybody here is the same like you. Okay. So please, I'm just using this dialogue as a way to help all of us. Okay. Okay. Raise a concern about mass society, right? Or this is, what do you see? Are you in a mass society right now? Just look around with eyes. What's real right now? Is this a mass society? Is there any mass society here? Look around. I mean, don't touch. Just look around. I'm serious. Just peruse the room. Look out the window. Where are you? Raven. No. Those are just more ideas. I don't see anything called a small society here. Just look. Don't call it anything. How about if you didn't call it anything? What if you just looked with those pure eyes? And what would you see? Just look around. I mean, I'm really inviting you. Just look around. What do you see? No, you don't see a bunch of individuals. No, that's what you think. This is helpful. This is what you think. Try again. Look around. What do you see? No. You're thinking and labeling and all based on your experience. You just see that. That's all you see. I mean, we all see that. Don't you just see that? Yeah, and that's quite wonderful to look at, isn't it? It's so simple. Who's the teacher here? I mean, if you're ready to take it, I'll give it to you. This is what we want to begin to see, Raven. I just see that. All right, the most simple, I see people. That's what we label them. Okay? That's like, I see tree. And just to realize, everything after that is your own conceptualization, your own fabrication. And I'm not saying that's bad or good, because that's the mind. But we have to understand what's happening. That's why I'm belaboring it. I'm not saying that's bad, but in the beginning, we don't see that. I mean, what you did was beautiful. You go, but look at this mass society and what's going on in this big society. And it's like, Raven, there's no mass society here. That's just something in your mind, isn't it? And then when you look around, you go, well, I see, I forget what you saw, suits and whatever you saw. You see what I'm saying? Or I see the Sangha. Right? But that's, again, more elaboration, labeling. Right? And we want to just know that. Right? So what we're doing is learning to be aware of the fabrication, the filter. So I'm very grateful to you, we all are, that you've been willing to, and I hope everybody else will just, these dialogues are what help us, because we all do that. So you want to begin to go back to, people, right? And then we may go, a little more discrimination, men, women, right? Old, young. You see, we can, and it can get more elaborated, more elaborated, more elaborated. But when we leave, the more we leave consensual reality, which again is sort of like what we all agree with. So would everybody agree that sort of in this, would everybody agree that in this room there are people? Okay. And as we look around the room, would we agree there are men and women and there are young and old? Would everybody agree? See, after that, it's going to begin to get a little dicey. There may be other things, But you see, and the more we go and label and describe, it becomes more and more personal. Right, see it as it is. Now, again, we live in, let's not jump ahead. But that's a good, just to see that, just to see that. Oatmeal. See how simple it is. Oatmeal. That's all it is. Taste. That's all it is. Oatmeal has a taste. Like, dislike, good, bad. That's all coming from where? Me. And how did I arrive at this great insight? Am I some sort of culinary genius, that I can go, no, it's just my own conditioning, right? I don't even know that. I mean, if you grew up in your home, right? Dana, maybe you grew up in your home, the oatmeal was always served cold, right? Always served cold. And that's where everybody ate it, right? All of a sudden you come to a place like this where they're serving hot oatmeal and you go, yuck, what is wrong with that chef, Does he know how to cook, or not cook oatmeal, And somebody else, and we think that it's the truth. There's no truth. Okay, hold on. Slow down. Raven, there you go. You're going to go off again. Come back, Raven. Do you see me? Good. I see you. Good place to begin. Keep it simple. For the people in this room who are used to complicating, keep it simple. You still see me? Good. I still see you. That's all. Can you feel your hands touching? Yeah, good. Can you feel yourself sitting on the cushion? See, Gee, what a relief to let go of all that. Oh, this is easy. That's all I got to do. You know, just sit here, listen, look. Now, I know you're thinking, I can see you. Look at that. Yeah. Yeah, this is. No. Just enough. Enough good questions. Now just stop. Sometimes we got to, you know, and we'll get more into this tomorrow. We got to learn to talk to our mind. Say, stop. Everything's okay. Because it's boom, 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 boom. Have you ever asked a question in your life? Ever asked a question? Just any kind of question in your life. How many questions do you think you've asked in your life? Millions. And yet here you are. That should tell you something about questions and answers.
You didn't say one only.
Over the next 4 days, things will begin to click. But that was good start. Do you still see me?
Yes.
Do you hear my voice?
Yes.
Good. Keep it simple. Ether, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Meaning, yeah, again, I've never been. I'm just making that up. Uh huh. Good conversations with who? Oh, so they, yeah. So again, yeah. I would say that's condition. Yeah, yeah. I was using the example of that kind of chamber, as like, that's all you know. It's like emerging from that without any conditioning behavior. You know, yeah, we have a full, in a dream, do you dream? What's your name? John, right? John, did you dream? Do you dream? Of course you dream. In your dream, do you smell things? But could you smell something in a dream? Could you have a dream where you smell something? Yeah, do you see things in dreams? Do you hear things in dreams? Do you feel things in dreams, emotions? Where else is it coming from? Oh, so the question is, yeah, but I'm trying to help you see in yourself. So in your dreams, right, you have a full range of sensory experiences and feelings. And yet, are your eyes open? No, I'm not asking you that. Are your eyes open? No. And yet you're seeing. Yeah. You're hearing. You're smelling. You're having a full range of sensory experience. And you're having feelings, emotional experiences. And it's all going on where? In your mind. Your body's inert. Yeah. Our sensory experience is conditioned already. We have left long ago. We have left that pure presence. Yeah. Well, that could. We're not going there. Yeah. So, right. So even our current sensory experience isn't pure. It's conditioned. Like, dislike, tastes. Right? Somebody who grew up in India, would come here and go, what? Ugh, bland, right? Because their taste buds have been conditioned. You know, we would sit down to a breakfast in India, and we'd be like, I spent a lot of time in India. I'd be running for so hot. So, yeah. So, and they're going, it's delicious. What's wrong with this guy? So, I mean, that even our senses, are conditioned by experience. Now, again. This is not bad. Okay, I'm just presenting an objective, Is that clear? This is like science. This is not bad or good, but it's just helping us understand what's going on. Yes. So just repeating this for the, Angie said, yeah, she's sitting there, the light streaming in, and all of a sudden she sees that the air is full of dust. What is dust? I mean, isn't that interesting? We call it dust. I mean, I don't know what it is, right? It could just be what's there all the time. Maybe particles, I mean, but we call them dust. So even to say dust is, yeah, so... And she's saying, yeah, so I'm breathing all the time, walking around. I'm not really realizing that I'm walking through a field of dust all the time and breathing dust in, and, you know, it's all the, and she's using another analogy. Say, is that sort of like, you know, is that going on all the time? Yes. There's something humbling in that. There's something humbling in knowing that our cognitive thinking mind and all the way it process maybe doesn't know much of anything about reality. It maybe knows its thoughts about reality. Right, Raven? Its thoughts about reality. But that is not reality. Yes. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. The question is, do feelings all? I had mentioned that first comes the thoughts, then comes the feeling. In Buddhist psychology, yes. Originally, it is a perception and a thought that creates a feeling response. Now. But like everything else, like even our taste buds and all that, things become conditioned, right? So a lot of times, you know, feeling states or whatever, you know, can arise by themselves or seem to arise without even a cognitive component, yeah. Because we have become complicated. I mean, babies cry because of something. They're cold. They're hungry. They want to be picked up. You know what I mean? Their distress is related to reality. Right? But we can what? We can cry anytime we want. All we could do is think about a sad situation, right? And we start crying. Right? Totally disconnected from reality. And yet we think it's real. The Buddha said, when he gave an example of this, he said, if somebody thinks about a great, something that happened in their life prior that was a great loss to them, then they will get depressed. He used as an example of how people think and then they feel. Yes.
I expected as a dual polarity kind of person that I would, that I would be filtering out 50% of the world about. So I read the New York Times, but I don't listen to Fox News. But the example you used was 98%.
Oh, hold on. That is not... The question is... he understands 50 filters, but... He quoted me as saying 98%. I just made that figure up. I mean, but actually there probably are people who have measured this stuff, so I don't know. But we just, because we are not present. Because even when you're reading, you're not just reading, you're processing what you're reading. and the processor is strongly conditioned by your mind and your storehouse, and we are endless. We meet people and we see people. We have new experiences. We are processing. So it could be 99%. I might have been off. Yes, 1 and 2. Yes, Maria. Well, it could be.
Well, my mother must have listened to waltzes. I can so relax when I hear
waltzes. Yeah, good.
Boys, we know crack babies, right? They want crack, and they're not even born yet, the babies.
Right. So, yeah, the conditioning goes on as long, as soon as we have sensory experience, that experience can be conditioned by how it unfolds. Now, again, I'm not going to go there, but traditionally in Buddhism, in Buddhist Yogacara psychology, that storehouse consciousness, that is the part of the mind that moves from one lifetime to a next. So from a traditional, and I'm not going to go into it, because it's not essential. It's enough to know that it's about the life of this lifetime. But that, that there are conditionings that are skewing us, we might say, in certain directions that we come into with, just waiting for situations to bring them up. So I mean, it's even bigger than the womb. But going to the womb is certainly interesting. Yes, Robbie. Yeah, so obviously we're going to be here for 4 days. And so Robbie was saying, as I've sort of become more aware, I've been aware of how a lot of my reactions and responses are, I can begin to see conditioning. But if it's so pervasive that really all our experience, how do we ever see all that? Well, they say that is what a fully omniscient Buddha is. that actually can see all that, right? But short of that, I mean, the journey is to become more and more aware, but at least to understand, to understand that all my responses, all Fred's responses are conditioned by Fred's experience. Now, knowing that, I may not listen to him 2/3 of the time and choose to do the right thing. We'll get into that. It's kind of a working hypothesis, so to speak, that allows us to be in the world where, again, like we say, things are arising in our own mind, reactions, responses, and rather than, immediately going with it, have a little distance, a little mindfulness, a little self-awareness. But that's what we're going to be getting into. Yes, Anne. And we have lunch at 12:30, and we're supposed to have a little time for outdoor walking meditation. So it looks like it's beautiful outside. Yes. Oh, okay. Well, so the question is, if you're operating from the ground, then you no longer have the filters. You have to speak to a Buddha about things like that. I'm not going to step in there. But certainly to have an experience of the ground gives you a lot of freedom. To know there's ground under here, and that ground is the source of all life, so to speak, allows me to buy this place and totally redo it. There's the freedom. This also has to do with what's called emptiness, the unconditioned nature of things. So when you know that as a reality, it does give you a lot of freedom to play in life, right? Rather than, you know. I'm always amazed, you know, these like construction people, you know. Oh, yeah, you take that wall down and you put that one. You know, it's like, what? You know, it's like, yeah, rip that out. And you know, like, what? Right? I mean, things look so solid, didn't they? It's a wall. You know what I mean? Rip it out. Oh, yeah, you can lower it or rip it out. You know, it's like that kind of freedom. You see? We want that kind of freedom. Yes, last question. Well, no. The thinking mind, he's asking, what is the thinking mind really? No, the thinking mind is that sixth level of consciousness. That's your thinking mind. It thinks, it cognates, it analyzes, it judges, it's this or that. But it is, so, I mean, it's if you can sort of imagine, like, sort of outwardly, right? Here's your sense data, right? All this data. I know you're a computer man, right? All this data is coming in through your five senses, right? And you see that, okay? And the thinking mind is processing that based on all its conditioning and concepts and all that, right? What it doesn't see is that it's also being conditioned unconsciously from this side. One is the sense of self, that all that's happening is happening to me, as well as, you know, there's so much that is being conditioning even my thoughts and the way I perceive from my storehouse consciousness. So these are, what's in the storehouse consciousness are more like impressions, energies, formations, you know. In Buddhism, the Buddha said, yeah, if you've been thinking a certain way for a long time, I don't know, they translate often as a leaning. You know? Your mind kind of leans in that direction and you don't even know it. So it's like that. But it is, you know, the eyes see, the ears hear, that's their function. The conscious mind thinks, it processes. That's what it does. Well, there's nothing going on in nine. It's the ground. It's the basis, but there's nothing going on there. It's the basis. It's supporting. And there's really no such thing as nine consciousnesses. That's a schema of this. I mean, all nine consciousnesses are right here. There's no clear demarcation. The demarcation came by people kind of analyzing experience. It's all, it's only, actually, there's only one mind. Okay? Just one mind. Forgive me for confusing you. Okay? So good. So I just wanted to spend this first time just kind of laying the groundwork, and we will be working this over these 3-4 days together.